welcome to Freedomizer and the Sabbath Hour. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. This morning on our own blog talk, we talked about the idea of, so you think you're a Christian? And in a half hour, we jammed in a lot of ideas about what Christianity is, what it's not. And if we define Christianity as those who follow Christ and do what he says and believe in what he said to do, and you actually study out what that amounted to, you'll find that a lot of people who claim to be Christians over the last centuries really don't measure up to that form of Christianity. They simply aren't and never did what Christ said that we should do. And this is what amazes me today. You know, when I go through the Bible and you actually look up the quotes where Christ said to do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that, even Paul, who tells us that we're saved by faith, not by works, is very specific in saying that if you're doing this, 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 you have no inheritance in the kingdom of God. He's relating inheriting the kingdom of God with what you're doing and not doing. Yeah, he says you're saved by faith. He isn't really disagreeing with James, who says your faith without works is dead. He is agreeing with him because he goes through and tells you what you must be doing if you really believe in the Spirit of God and Christ and have faith in him. Not just say it, but actually really have faith in him, that you will be doing certain things and not doing other things. So he's relating it to what you do and don't do. Christ did the same thing, not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who do it the will of the Father. So if you're going to be a Christian, if you're going to tell me that you believe in Christ, I've got to see what you're doing, not what you're saying, what you're doing. Because Christ said, not what you're saying, but what you're doing is the key. The epistles go on to say that, you know, we will judge them by their fruit, by what they're doing, the fruit of their actions. And the fruit of their actions is what they're doing based on the fruit of their heart. Because you do what you really believe in, you do what you really love. I can tell when somebody goes out and does something they really love, it's seen in the way they do it, the way they attend to it. They like doing it. They want to do it. You can't hardly keep them from it because that's what they love. So we got a lot of people saying that they love Christ and they believe in Christ and they get all excited about Christ. But when I'm looking at what they're doing, I don't see them doing what Christ did or what the early church did. Now, that's because I've actually taken some time out and studied history to find out what was the early church really doing? What were these early Christians really doing? What were the people who persecuted the Christians really upset about? And when I began to look into this, which is there's a national historical record of what this amounts to, you suddenly realize, holy smokes, I'm not a Christian. Because I'm not doing what they were doing. I'm not a part of a Christianity that looks anything like the early church. What's going on that I'm not a part of an organization that is doing anything like what the early church was doing? Why aren't I? Because also in studying the history of all this, I discovered that the world around me today, I mean, we have VCRs and computers and blog talk radio and all these marvelous inventions, but really, in essence, what we're doing on a day-to-day basis, our government, our economy, our society in general, is really very, very, very much like the society at the time of Christ. And I've written a number of books and a lot of little short articles and pamphlets, Rome versus Us, where I make comparisons about Rome and the United States and how we're a lot more similar than you would like to believe, a lot more similar. And we're seemingly following the exact same path that that Roman government followed. That Roman government originally was a republic, moved to an indirect democracy, and then to an imperial power. And it took them, you know, 400 or 500 years to get to that point. But we do everything so much faster, so we may get it done in a lot less than 500 years. Once they got to that point, it only took a few hundred years for them to absolutely, totally collapse. And, of course, during that collapsing period, they had times where they were changing leaders every month. There were assassinations and revolutions and overthrows and betrayals all going on in their history that simulates much of what we do today. Rome had become kind of the police force to the world and was settling disputes all over the world. They had set up a welfare system that was duplicated in country after country and eventually underwritten by a single world bank, all of which came into conflict with the early Christians. But the early Christians had every legal right to be what they were being. They were persecuted, but many of the court cases that were brought against them, even though people were sometimes executed and lands confiscated, before Constantine, Rome was already recognized, Roman emperors were already recognized that the Christians had been illegally persecuted, lands that had been taken away from them had been illegally confiscated, and were being returned. Imperial proclamations were returning vast tracts of land that belonged to the church back to the church. What was going on? Why were they doing that? What was happening? What was the church actually doing? Well, those of you who have read the books, Thy Kingdom Come, The Covenants of the Gods, Free Church Report, or any of these other articles that we put out, I have already begun part of this trip, and 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hour show isn't enough to cover it all. So if you haven't read some of these things, go online to hisholychurch.org. You can download them, join the local networks, which you find under the guide that has a little drop-down menu underneath them, and join a local network. And there are people that have studied these and can help you study them. We have online study courses going on pretty regularly. I can't be at all of them. So other people have done some studying, and we usually have two or three people that have done some studying on those courses, and we'll help you walk you through some of the books so you can find out. Now, it's very important that you realize that I don't have all the answers. And when I first started writing this, I kept thinking that God, you know, why am I the guy that's picked out to write this? Because this is iconoclastic. This is going to buck what you've been taught, what has been taught for hundreds of years in schools. But nobody's going to believe me. I mean, why would they believe me? So God gave me, this is the way I see it, you can say I just happen to do a lot of studying, the answer and showed me where to find the answers. And so, ergo, 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 footnotes is showing you where I got this so that you don't have to just believe me. I not only give you pieces of the puzzle, but I show you where I got them because I don't expect you to believe me. I don't want you to believe me. But the reality is, as you start to see the pieces of these puzzles put together, you're going to see that history is repeating itself. And in that repetition, we're going to see all the same things that happened in the days of Rome, in the days
early church.
So
I have a question for you, Brother Gregory.
Sure, great.
I'm going to read it as he wrote it. I don't understand the question, so I'll leave it up to you. What do you think about the recent developments with pre-flow dollar? Do you think that way, due to the black community having more of a history of corporal punishment, do you think he should have been arrested, and does this affect his ministry or Christianity as a whole in a negative way?
We're talking about Dollar the minister.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of the details of what's happened to him. I guess he was somewhat prosecuted or arrested or charged. I haven't been following any recent story other than the fact that he was under some kind of investigation. Heck, I'm under investigation probably. Because the government's very paranoid. They're not after me to get money because I ain't got none. But from what I've seen of Dollar in his preaching, and I've seen videos, I'm getting that noise again. If I get cut off, I'll dial you right back.
Okay.
Anyway, from what I've seen of, he hasn't got a clue about Christianity. He really isn't following what Christ said, isn't teaching what Christ said, isn't anywhere close to what the early church was doing or saying. And as far as I'm concerned, he's on his own. I don't think he's following Christ. Now, that may be the result of the fact that he's not been taught what real Christianity was. You know, I can't speak for the man's particular soul, although I certainly see, you know, his interests in life are, you know, Jesus came. You know, I knew a preacher years ago, and I didn't know he was a preacher when I first met him. And he was talking about his new car, his Cadillac, and he was talking about all the new fancy gadgets in it. This was back in the 70s, early 70s, mid-70s. And he was bragging about it and everything and how great it was and great ride and everything. And I said, well, what do you do for a living? And he says, well, I'm a preacher. And I said, you're a preacher? You can afford a car like this? And he said, yeah, well, you know, I travel a lot, and I have to be fresh when I get there so that I can speak to the people. And I thought, and this is what actually came out of my mouth. I didn't mean to be insulting, but it just came out. I guess sometimes I'm blunt. I said, if an ass was good enough for Jesus, I figure a Volkswagen would have been good enough for you. But, you know, I'm just astounded. The preachers don't seem to have the same sense of service and responsibility. They seem to be in love with their pulpit or pedestal more than they are in love with what Christ was saying. But most Christian preachers going to seminaries, I went to the seminary, I know a lot of people went to different seminaries, they're not being taught what Christ was doing, what the early church was doing. And so they're not doing it. Now, I have run across a few ministers that are really taking a second hard look at what they've been taught is Christianity. I mean, it's been 2,000 years. In 200 years, they completely twisted the purposes of the Constitution. Do you think they haven't been fiddling with the Bible for 2,000 years? Now, it's there. The information is there, but we don't pick up that book without a lot of preconceived notions. We had a meeting today after the radio program. I wish everybody could have heard that after Liberty Radio Live, Keys of the Kingdom, we had an hour long with Hal Anthony. And that was far better than the show itself. But unfortunately, the recorders weren't running, so you'll have to wait till we do that show again. We had a meeting about the fact that we're hampered by to get out the message of Christianity because we're using words like the church and Bible, etc. And when we use those words, people immediately, their brain shifts over to what they think the church is, what they think Christ was preaching. And that's something that's been taught to them. And we're going to have a show coming up here, what probably won't be for 2 weeks, on terms. We're going to revisit a lot of the terms and language that we use every day in relationship to church and find out what it actually meant at the time of Christ. Because if you don't know the context of what Christ was saying in history at that time, you could easily be misled into thinking that he was, you know, out there starting another religion. He was returning people to the religion of Moses and the religion of Abraham. But now when I say that, everybody thinks, oh, we were supposed to be Orthodox Jews? No, because we don't know what Abraham and Moses was doing either. Our vision of Moses is given to us by the Pharisees of those days. That's where it's come down from.
And the movies.
And of course, the movie Hollywood, notorious for that sort of thing. And so you get this image in your mind when you say Moses. You know, everybody thinks he looked like Charlton Heston. So half the people think God looks like Charlton Heston. But the reality is that Jesus said, if you knew Moses, you would know me. Because Jesus and Moses were preaching the exact same thing. But it doesn't mean that we're supposed to become Orthodox Jews, because most of the Jews today don't recognize who Moses was and what he was actually preaching. You can see this by the Jewish state in Israel. It has a heavily progressive income tax. I mean, the Jewish state in Israel has the people in Israel under a stronger bondage than what they were under in Egypt. And that's a fact. I mean, their government system in Israel today resembles what was going on in Egypt at the time of the bondage of Israel in Egypt more than it resembles anything like Moses was setting up. And I could go through that. I mean, that's an outlandish statement. And I should be able to back it up. And the fact is, I can. But I'm not going to be able to do it in this short show. Which is why we have to write the book. That's another problem we've noticed. Is, you know, I'm getting that static over the phone.
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
Yeah, I've been on your end, sir.
Okay. That's peculiar, because I didn't get it all day. And I've been on the radio for hours today. Mm. So I'm switching over. I'm still connected, though, to another deal, trying to get away from it. I'm not sure where that's coming from. It's kind of stopped here. But anyway, and this is the problem, is that whenever you mention the word church, you mention the word Christ, you mention the word Bible or Jew or Muslim, or not so much Muslim, but at least Moses and Abraham, that people's brains go over to their preconceived notions of these things. Oh, yeah, Moses, I know him. Oh, yeah, Jesus, that was the guy, you know, going around doing this and that. And the fact is the layers of deception are so great. And so to uncover these, it's not just writing a couple of books, but I have to show them why and where I'm coming to these conclusions. Now, I just kind of know it, but then that's not enough to tell people. You have to give them something to kind of pry them loose from their preconceived notions. And one of the things I point out is that the early church was the entire social welfare of all Christians. They didn't get social welfare from anywhere else but at church. And the money that you put into the church didn't buy them limousines or Cadillacs or fancy rings or any of that stuff. It was to take care of the widows and orphans of your society, the needy of your society, in what James calls pure religion. That's what your contributions were for, and part of those contributions went and supported the actual ministers. The ministers were supported by usually 10 families picked a minister, 10 or 12. They used to find both combinations, but 10 was the most common because it was the oldest. It's what the Israelites had done, it's what the Teutons had done, it's what the Gauls did, it's what the Celts did. 10 families picked a minister, and a family was a grandfather, all his married sons, and all their children and grandchildren. That's one family. And they picked one minister. So what they made, when they gave a tenth of what they made to the family of their minister, which was him and all his married sons, when they picked that minister and they gave their tithing to that minister, it would work out to a mean salary equal to their own, to those 10 families. You know, to say if some families were making $50,000 a year and some were making $30,000, then he would make somewhere in between. And that supported him. But he was health, education, and welfare. He was the emergency aid. He was everything. This is their government. And as far as the army is concerned, they were all the army. They all operated on a militia because it was against God's command to have a standing army. You were the army. You were called up. Now, when you were called up, how were you called up? In platoons, battalions? Well, those 10 family congregations, all those young men would be in the same outfit. And their lieutenant would be whoever they chose, because this is always bottom up. This is why the Christians were said to have been turning the world upside down. Well, the world was upside down. There was one man ruling them from the top, and that man was called their father, their patronus. It was fashioned after the family, but it was a gigantic corporate family called the Roman Empire. But Christ's government was not a part of that. That's what he says. My kingdom is not of this constitutional order or system of government. We explain that in the essay called Not of This World. And that word that he uses there means constitutional order or system of government. My kingdom's not of this constitutional order or system of government. He's saying to Pontius Pilate, you ain't got no jurisdiction. You have got no authority to try me. And he's amazed. And he agrees. And he washes his hands of the trial. And the Romans didn't try Jesus. And they didn't convict him because they had no jurisdiction. And we go into details as why they didn't. Because why were the Romans there? Where did they get their authority? They didn't conquer the place yet. They were invited in as a military occupying force to prevent civil war. This is why they were there. If you don't know the history, you don't know what's going on. And there has been an actual concerted effort by a religious community that knows the answer to keep you from this knowledge. And most of the religious communities you see out there, Methodists, Lutherans, whatever, they have just been duped by manipulation of the school books, all intentional behind the scenes, easily seducing the people into a form of godliness but denying the power of Christ. Christ was a king of a government. You got your ID to travel through the city from your church. It's called Logos. It's mentioned in the Justinian Codes. Logos is the Greek word for word. You showed your logos and you passed through the portals of cities and gateways. And this was your Christian ID, a form of ID at that time. It's also called in the Latin Titulus. In the Greek, they had a form of that was also called a paradigma. I'm getting static back again. Must be the Homeland Security tapping our lock.
Or lifting your leg or your arm or something.
No, I'm not even moving. I'm being really careful. I've heard this a couple of times, but we haven't had it all day. We haven't had it all week, but I'm certainly having it now. But anyway, until I'm disconnected, I'll just...
Speaking of disconnected, I think we just lost him. I see that we have a caller. While we're waiting for Brother Gregory to come back in, I'm going to cut to a quick commercial break. So we will be back after this short, brief commercial message. is.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Well, thank you for hanging in there. It was time to take a commercial break, so I did that little deed while you were getting your phone back up there, Brother Gregory.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't had that noise since I hooked up again. So.
Oh, that's okay. We'll figure it out. We'll just keep trooping along. Nobody can stop us here. We're on a roll.
Yeah.
I have a caller. If you don't mind, we take a little calling break before. Okay, caller from area code 917. Your mic is open.
Hi, how are you? My name is Dominic. How are you?
Hi.
Oh, fine.
Okay, I have a question for you. I heard earlier that you said that history has a way of repeating itself, and I absolutely agree with you. Are you able to identify some of what's going now with what happened before in terms of history repeating itself? And with that in mind, do you feel that that Babylon is physical or spiritual? And if it's physical, then where should people go?
It's both physical and spiritual. I heard one of the commercial breaks where the guy's talking about quantum answers, and of course our show last week was on quantum power. You can never separate the physical from the spiritual. You may imagine that they're different, that they're separate, but anybody knows that if you separate the spiritual from a physical being, you end up with a corpse, you end up with a dead thing. And one of the reasons that history repeats itself is that the precepts of nature are the same. They don't change. They've been the same for a long time. Certain things do change in nature. For instance, the Schumann resonance, which is the frequency, the base frequency of planet Earth, was thought to be a constant. It's changing. They're now seeing it change. Speed of light, we thought that was a constant, but they're seeing that it's changing. So, but the principles of these things and their interrelationship changes. So history repeats itself, but never exactly the same way. In precept, it repeats itself, but on levels, other levels, it will repeat itself on higher or lower levels. And there's all kinds of changes in the process right now that are repeats of past history. And like I said, we've got whole books that show you how much alike we've been. Man's the same, God's the same, the precept upon precept is the same. So once you understand those principles, you'll start to see what's going to happen. And some of this is not really preordained like we're puppets, but preordained in the sense that these laws are in effect, they're going to follow in a certain path and way. Where our choice is what side of the equation we're going to be on. Are we going to be on the side of evil, or are we going to be on the side of good? Are we going to be on the side of righteousness, or are we going to be on the side of unrighteousness? And unfortunately, the modern church today tells us that all kinds of things are okay and righteous, and we're okay in doing, and we're not. We're not okay in doing those. There's a whirlwind to reap from what we're doing. And unless you step back outside of the parameters of what you've been taught is religion, what you've been taught is Christianity or Buddhism or Hinduism or any of those things, because I can talk to you on these same principles in all those early great religions, because they all actually had much of the same sources. But they've been twisted and distorted by people who want you to go on the other side of the equation, away from those spiritual leaders. And so I don't really know exactly, you know, it's a big question, so there's no end to how to answer it.
Yes, I understand. No, I see a lot of your points. But how do you feel, because this is my first time listening to the show, so I'm really at a loss in terms of a lot of the information that you've been sharing. I do know that you are aware that that basically all of our freedoms in this country and all over are being threatened in the name of democracy. What do you think Babylon is? Where do you think it is? What do you think it represents? And do you think that Revelation 18 compels us to act?
Well, we're compelled to act. How we're to act, that is an individual thing. Now, I guess part of your question was, where do we go? Babylon, we're talking about Babylon, Mystery Babylon the Great, and so in order to understand what that is, you have to go back to what was Babylon. And Babylon, with Nimrod anyway, Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, and I have an article up on the net. We have recordings up on the net at hisholychurch.org. But one of the articles is Nimrod, a mighty provider instead of the Lord, which is really the way that should be best translated. Say again.
You said a mighty what?
Provider instead of the Lord.
Provider. Okay.
Because the word hunter there is almost always in the Hebrew translated provisions, provisionary. And what he was a mighty provider instead of the Lord, and basically what he was doing and got most of his power from creating a socialist state. Socialist states always weaken the people and strengthen the central powers of government.
Yeah.
And government becomes top-down instead of bottom-up. And democracy is one of the key ways in which you get into such a government.
Yeah.
You don't really want a democracy. You want a pure republic. But we have articles on that. What I'm saying, the only one I could find in history who really liked democracy was Karl Marx, because he knew that democracy leads to socialism and socialism leads to communism.
Yes.
And communism leads, in every case I've seen, has led to mass extinction.
Fascism, yes. Then mass extinction, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you heard me before or seen emails by me?
No. I'm afraid that I'm just one of the people who is concerned about what's going on. It's like the rebuilding of the Tower of Babel is being constructed as we speak.
Yeah, and I gotta get talk for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours just on what it means, the Tower of Babel, and what that word meant, tower, in the Hebrew, that'd be Magdalena. If you go into Hindu, Stani, Sari Vista was her second name there, means tower. Tower has to do with this chain of kind of corporate soul, chain of kings over kings over kings over kings.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing. We're all going under this centralized authority, and unfortunately at the very central authority is evil. Because God wants us to be in authority over ourselves. That's what the kingdom of God is. It's the right to be ruled by God with no other gods before me. And just understanding the word God in the Hebrew, understanding the word God, theos, if you walked into any court at the time of Jesus Christ, you would address the judge as theos in a Greek court or Elohim in a Hebrew court. And you can find that right in your Strong's Concordance. It's a term used to in deference to judges. God means judge. Who is your judge? Who has the right to judge you? Pontius Pilate did not have the right to judge Jesus Christ because his kingdom was not of Pontius Pilate's Roman Pax Romana. It had no treaty with it, which is why the Bible has always commanded its people not to give treaty-making powers to their leaders, not to go under those covenants and those contracts. We've done this all across the board. I mentioned the World Bank at the time of Jesus Christ. That was the Temple at Ephesus. We have a World Bank today. We have, actually our Treasury Department is modeled after the Temple at Ephesus, the front of the building anyway. We're repeating, it's not so much the building, but the buildings and the statues will be there, but it's the precepts. we are either forming a government based on what Christ was teaching, based on free will offerings, faith, hope, and charity, the perfect law of liberty, takes a virtuous people to do that, or forming the other kind of government. And what happened, if we want to look at an analogy to give you an insight into the future, is Moses was in a small level, the same thing that we're facing today on a global level, faced in Egypt. He did not free the people from Egypt jurisdiction, because even when they went out in the Sinai, they were still in Egyptian jurisdiction. Egyptian jurisdiction went all the way to Canaan, including Canaan at that time. But he freed them from a persona jurisdiction, and the world came against them. We always hear about all these martyrs during the first century church, but there were tens of thousands of Christians who were untouched, unharmed, protected, released, and not messed with at all. And they are actually prospering so much that the Romans tried to emulate what Christianity was doing, which is what Constantine was up to. He didn't repeat what Christ was doing. He emulated it with some very important elements missing. But Christianity was a very successful. The historians now look back at what Christians were doing in those first centuries. They said that they were a viable republic in the heart of the Roman Empire. They praised the union and I'm quoting right here out of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. They praised the union and discipline of the Christians. What were they doing? Ministers today are not teaching what they were doing. They aren't doing what the ministers of the early church did. And as to location, there are locations to go to. There are places that are prepared and being prepared. But you cannot find them by looking them up in a directory. You have to go back to that spiritual quantum level. And the only way back to that is you have to start physically caring about others as much as you care about yourself. You have to start physically forgiving others enough so that you can come together in free assemblies, which is what the church is, and not for the purposes of deluding yourselves, but being a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, providing all your benefits through faith, hope, and charity, through congregations bound together by love alone, no contract. When you can do that, the place that you will need to be will be revealed to you. And, you know, that's what we're doing. We're organizing people so that they have the chance to come together. A lot of people have that chance now through our network. They're not all taking advantage of it. Some are still waiting for some minister to come up and set everything up for them. And it doesn't work that way.
So basically, you think that we should form groups within the community so that we can
right.
help
it's,
each other.
Right, it's a lot way. About community, and you know, there's you know, I mean, the Kiwanis Club forms a group. So, it's a group, it's a network. Communities. If you form a small congregation in your local neighborhood or community, and you start looking for ways to help each other out so you don't have to go to the government. You're not dependent upon the governments of the world. Those governments of the world are like Nimrod. They provide benefits to you by taking away from your neighbor.
Yes,
at the point of a gun.
Things have changed a lot. Yes. Things have changed a lot in the last few decades alone.
It's been changing for a long time, but in the last few decades it's been phenomenally fast. Yeah, you from another country?
Haiti, Haiti.
Oh, Haiti. Okay, I was trying to place the accent. I couldn't figure out where it was.
Yeah, I'm from Haiti. But the reason why I have a lot of these questions is I don't know how much you have delved into the economic situation that is worldwide and the fact that the nations of Southern Europe are all near economic collapse. A lot of their banks have failed, and I'm sure you've touched on our currency system. The fact that it's based simply on hope.
hope and the wrong thing.
Yes, hope and bubble gum.
That's
exactly
what was going on in Rome.
But eventually that scenario is going to hit home.
Right.
And then even the forming of small communities.
Right. So, I know where you're going
because,
with that. If it's precept upon precept, and you get together with 10 other people like yourself who supposedly care about each other as much as you care about yourself, care about righteousness, which is God. You have to love God, which is righteousness, giver of life, etc., and you have to care about each other as much as yourself. That little community congregation, that little home church, has to care about other home churches and other congregations as much as they care about themselves. Because it's precept upon precept. So now you repeat this. You see this all throughout creation. Cells and cellular communication. If that is really the spirit that's bringing you together, and not fear, not anxiety, not fear, you know, you're not coming together out of selfish motives, but out of pure motives. Now, we're all going to come to some degree out of selfish motives, but that's where we get the opportunity of dealing with this on a day-to-day basis. And try to overcome that selfishness. But then you start forming this broader and broader network. And I gave an example to someone who I was talking to earlier today where we have a congregation over in Iowa, and they happen to be right next to a nuclear power plant that was starting to melt down during the floods. They were afraid it was going to be flooded and they would be spewing out radiation, and they thought, you know, we're only, you know, 15 minutes away from that. We'll have to leave. That whole congregation was offered places to live all over the country through our network right away. Now, I don't know if they could get along with each other once they had to move there, but fortunately the floodwaters went down and that plant didn't go nuclear and they didn't have to move. We have people growing seeds, more seeds than they're going to need. We had people here just in my office a few minutes ago that sat down and talked with some of these major seed producers that are producing the non-hybrid seeds. And so the idea is that we're not going to depend upon some big corporation to do this. We're doing it ourselves. And we're doing it all over. And we're doing it in a network, a living network is what we call it, of people that are connecting. And, yeah, some people will come out of fear. Some people will come out of what can I get for me. But we're getting more and more people that are coming actually with the character of Christ. That is where your Basra is. That is where your fortress is. That is, you individually will become the treasures of the kingdom. And, yes, miraculously, there will eventually, just like there was in the days of Moses, come a time where we're between the sea and the armies of Pharaoh, and nothing standing between us and them but the power of God. But that's where faith really comes in. But first you have to have faith in the way that Christ went, which was a system based on faith, hope, and charity. As soon as you got the baptism of Jesus Christ in Judea, you could no longer collect any welfare from the government offices of the Pharisees. You were cast out of the system. By getting the baptism of Christ, you were opting out of the system set up by Herod originally. That was a social welfare system called Corban, but it was the Corban of the Pharisees based on forced contributions, based on statutory regulations. The Corban of Christ is based on faith, hope, and charity. You have two coats, your neighbor has none, you share one. But how do you know who your neighbor is? How do you know who is like that? Well, you have to start looking for them now. When the sheep are lost in the field, and I'm an expert at this, they start baying for each other to find out and calling each other together so that they become one body. Otherwise, the coyotes will pick them off one at a time. Range sheep, anyway. Domestic sheep, unfortunately, we've all been made domestic sheep. We don't have that sense. But they come together and they can move through the field fairly safe because they're connected. Well, we can be connected too more sophisticatedly, but there's not one single place everybody's supposed to go. But that network is going to be very important, because one of the things the Israelites had to be was mobile. And in order to be mobile, you know, they weren't moving down through the desert in a single file all the time. But if you attacked one Israelite, they would blow that shofar, that horn. And suddenly, you know, all kinds of Israelites were showing up. And pretty quick, the Amalekites and Amalekites knew, don't mess with those guys. And that's what we have to be, is we have to be Minutemen for Christ by being Minutemen for each other. We have to be there for each other. And, you know, this is a short program, so you can't get it all covered, but...
Yes,
I don't
lot.
Know if I answered your question or not, but
yeah. Well, yes, for the most part, except for one more thing, I might want to add is that I've been reading a lot of reports that a lot of people are moving to the southern hemisphere because that's actually supposed to be a little bit safer. Being that the concentration of the population is in the northern hemisphere, so in the event of war and things of that nature, the northern hemisphere is a lot more susceptible.
Unlike World War II, unlike other wars that we've seen in the past, what's coming is going to be global. I know some people have moved down to South America and places like that, but. You'll be a stranger in a strange land.
Yeah, no, I understand. But what happens is that it's going to be global, correct? However,
correct.
The geographic lines are simply there for our purposes. But the money that controls everything, these geographic lines don't mean anything, and so the southern hemisphere is fair game. So given that most wars are most likely coordinated events anyway, then they would have prepared places for themselves that are safe.
Well, yeah, they have. They have prepared places, the Bushes and the Moonies and all those guys are in this huge area down in South America.
And have you ever heard of FARC?
Say
again? You've heard of FARC. H-A-A-R-P. I'm sorry. That's H-A-A-R-P.
Oh,
what,
okay.
Is,
ARP. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's quite possible that in their minds that they'll be able to that the southern hemisphere will be a lot safer.
Well, it could be, but I don't want to get people have to learn to move by the spirit.
Yes.
And I can tell you examples. We only have a few minutes left of the show, but
yeah,
I can tell you that literally God can time where you go and what you do in seconds. I mean, you can be walking down a hallway and he can say stop. And if you didn't stop right when he said stop and you don't hear the voice, you're walking in the spirit, you'll be in the wrong place at the right time or the right place at the wrong time. And so people have to learn to be still and listen and follow that guide. Something's telling you that certain things are right and something's telling you certain things are wrong. You have to listen to that. And when you listen to that and act upon that, then God will tell you more.
Right.
And he will guide you. And, I mean, literally, I have been saved over and over again simply because God intervened. And I know that it wasn't because I was doing the right thing at that moment. It's because that when he's given me jobs to do, I've done them. And when I don't do them, then I lose his covering, his protection. And I've been in some extremely dangerous situations that were absolutely insane, and God has protected me. And that's what you're going to need, because I don't believe there's any safe place. You know, I wouldn't want to be living next door to the Bushes in South America, I tell you the truth. I think that would be a very unsafe place, just in case some of the karma rubs off.
Last question. Who are today's Amalekites?
You know, they're probably living next door.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you
they're
so much.
Philistines galore in this world today. There's an actual big, and this is something I just thought about before the program, is that I see a huge shifting of consciousness going on in the world today. And a large number of people are taking on the consciousness of the Philistines and the Amalekites and the Amalekites. And a very small number of people are taking on the consciousness of Christ,
this
quantum consciousness.
Yes.
And the fact is we've been dead bones, and now we're starting to gather. And God will put the flesh up. God will breathe the life into us. But if he gives you a little truth, act upon it so that he will give you more. This is the story of the talents. And whatever he gives you, do well with that, and he will give you more. And he will give you all that you need when the time comes. Now, that's a little mysterious, but people who have walked a little bit in faith know what I'm talking about. But we are coming up on the end of the show, and I don't want to run over my time.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Gather. Take care.
Okay. One thing before we completely go off the air, Cheryl, I talked last week about the quantum, and I mentioned a particular meditation exercise. I don't know if anybody heard that. They can go back and listen to the old show, I guess, and maybe we'll talk about that. On June 23rd, I can't be here.
I got that message, and I put the slot for you, so no worries.
Okay, great. I wanted to make sure that was on the go. I've got other people taking care of Liberty Radio Live and that, but I wanted to make sure I didn't leave you guys suddenly in the lurch. But I'll be back the following week, and then people can beat up on me if they want. But anyway, we're at the end of another hour, Cheryl. Time goes by so fast.
Oh, it does. It's amazing. I don't know how you do it, but you have me enthralled for the whole time that you're here.
Well, I'll let you take over and sign us out.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us here at Freedomizer Radio. Stay tuned next for Team Free State.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.